but that's the old me. Shouting out on my window, drove down, 'cause I don't care anymore. Said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday afternoon on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620, or you are listening to the podcast version of this show, which we encourage you to do. Download this show and you can listen to it wherever you want, whenever you want, however you want. Either way, we're going to make your day a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in entertainment and pop culture. And by everything, I mean everything that Jeremy and I have watched and feel like talking about. And Jeremy, of course, being my co-host, Jeremy Branch. Welcome, Jeremy.
Well, thank you for having me on this glorious Saturday. If ever there was a podcast or a radio show tailor-made to my sensibilities, I very well think this may be the one.
Yeah, because you're the co-host. And we agree.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And we agree about what we're going to talk about. So, you know, it has to be stuff that we both care about, and hopefully, sometimes the listeners care about it too. I guess
we'll see.
Hopefully. Speaking of listening, I wanted to briefly shout out, and I honestly just came across it this morning. I guess it's the 20th anniversary of Spotify. Which is just crazy, because I mean, I think it is a service that has kind of changed our way of listening to things in a lot of ways, listening to music in particular, but they do podcasts as well and other things. In fact, I think you can get our podcast on Spotify, if I'm not mistaken. You can get it pretty much anywhere you get podcasts. So maybe you listen to us through Spotify, you know, awesome. But what we're talking about here is they've introduced this feature called Your Party of the Years. With the S in parentheses, and it is a chance to discover your all-time listening history on Spotify, which may or may not be something you want to do. I don't know. You might be embarrassed by it or something. Did you see the SNL sketch that I'm going to just briefly diverge into, where they were talking about everybody loves the Spotify year-end wrapped, and they were talking about that. Oh, I listened to this, and so we're doing the same thing for DoorDash. And everybody's like, no, please don't do that.
That's a good concept.
Yeah, it was really good. So the same basic concept, except it's for the entirety of the existence of Spotify. So if you go in there and you click on this, it's going to tell you what date you joined Spotify, which for me was July of 2011. So I'm coming up on 15 years of having Spotify, which again...
You know when I joined?
When's that?
Just to get a little bit embarrassing right off the bat, 2024.
Oh, wow. You were a late adapter.
I don't know what I was listening to before that. It's not like YouTube music or something. But yeah, when I saw that I've only been on Spotify for around 2 years, I was a little embarrassed about that. But we'll continue on with the embarrassment. What are the next pieces?
That is pretty crazy, because, I mean, it's got to mean that your results are going to be interesting. We'll get to that in a minute. So yeah, I'm coming up on 15 years of having this service, which is crazy. It tells you the very first track that you streamed on Spotify, and it actually gives you
back
a little
in 2011, Julio. Yeah, like there's multiple choice, but what were your four? And then what was the one that you listened to first?
So I don't remember what all four of them were, because I guess I can run through it again real quick here and look. I very quickly narrowed it down to two, one of which was the right answer, but was not the one that I picked.
So it's the only kind of trivia question out of each of the different little summaries, and it provides you with four different multiple choices. You choose the one that you may have listened to first. Julio pulls it up a list now.
July 30th, 2011. Also tells you how many different songs you've listened to over the course of your Spotify career. Do you remember or have an estimation of what your number was?
No, I do not, but I can pull it up real quick.
14,386 different songs for me.
Oh, that's quite a bit.
Yeah. So, all right. So my options for my first song ever listened to. And I'm going to do these in alphabetical order by the name of the song. It's not the order they came up in, but just to keep you guessing here. Animal by Neon Trees.
Good song.
Around the World by Daft Punk.
Great song.
D-A-N-C-E by Justice.
Another good one.
And Rude Boy Rock by Lion Rock.
Okay. I'm going to guess Rude Boy by Lion Rock was your first one.
So that was my guess too. And I was incorrect. I quickly narrowed it down to that one and the one which was the correct answer, which was D-A-N-C-E.
Okay. Which, yeah, that would have been right around the time that Justice Breakthrough album Cross was released, and just a banger from end to end.
Yeah, so maybe we'll play that coming into the next segment or something, because it's a great song. I think we may have played it on the show before, but I love that song. Still holds up. I haven't listened to Rude Boy Rock in a while, and that's a great song too. So, might give me
my first song listened to came down to these four potential answers: Heads Will Roll by the AAS.
Okay.
This Corrosion by Sisters of Mercy.
Awesome.
Trick or Treat by Fastway and Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo. 2024. Julio, what do you think?
All right, so I love three of those four songs. So my guess is going to be the Fastway song, because that's the one that I'm not, it's not me.
Hilariously, I must have been putting together a Halloween playlist, because all of these songs kind of have that Halloween season vibe to them. But the first song I listened to on Spotify was Dead Man's Party by Oingo Boingo.
Okay, nothing wrong with that. No issues there. Of course, gives you like the typical Spotify stuff of like your most listened to artist, your most listened to tracks, etc. My most streamed artist was not a surprise at all, because it's my favorite band, They Might Be Giants. Would have been kind of surprised if it was not that. What did you come up with there?
All-time most streamed artist, 6,138 minutes so far. Chromeo,
okay.
Not necessarily my favorite band, but there's something that I have to address on this is I primarily downloaded Spotify to give my listeners, my passengers when I do rideshare, like a comfortable, laid-back experience. So much of my summary comes down to like lo-fi hip-hop music that I couldn't even tell you the name of the songs or anything, you know?
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so it's a little different how it's skewed.
So you know there's a way, you if you have Spotify, you may or may not know this, but there is a way in Spotify that you can listen in an incognito mode. So that if you're playing stuff that you don't want tracked for whatever reason, I'm not somebody that really believes in guilty pleasures, but if you're a guilty pleasure person or something like that, you know, you can choose to screen stuff out. I think a lot of people, I think they started automatically doing it with Christmas music, because it was skewing everybody's list, because they listen to a lot of Christmas music at, you know, 1 or 2 months of the year, and then it skews everybody's lists for the entire year. So I did notice that I had only one Christmas song in my top 100, and it's one that people might miss it being a Christmas song. It was No Doubt's cover of the Vandals' "Oi to the World."
Yeah, that's a good one.
So what was your most streamed, your all time most streamed song, and how many listens did it have?
Oh boy. I think it was, if you go ahead first and I'll pull up mine.
Okay. So mine, wasn't a huge surprise, cause it's topped my year end once or twice. Pump It Up by Elvis Costello and the Attractions. Great song. 135 listens.
My number one most streamed song is called Old 45s by Chromeo. And when you've been listening since 2011, there is a little bit more like holistic preference that can be gleaned from that. Where I think as somebody who's only been listening since 2024, it's what recently has kind of flipped its way into my playlist and things like that. I suspect over 10 years, the true trends will start to reveal themselves, and things like Nine Inch Nails and Deftones and all that stuff would kind of find its way in there, you know?
I do. Well, we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Johnny Cage, Kitana, Sonya, Kano, Shao Kahn,
excellent,
Liu Kang, Jack, Jade, Cole Young, Kung Lao, Quan Chi, Shang Tsung, Raiden, Bi-Han, Scorpion, flawless victory.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Why is that just irresistible?
What, you really let that one cook.
You had to, because they get into the list of names, and who are you going to leave out?
So, interesting piece of trivia. That remix was released after the original because characters listed in that song, in that version just now, are not even featured in the first two Mortal Kombat films, which were the two that were available at the time of the release of the track.
No, that is a brand new version that was done for the new film Mortal Kombat 2.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
The list of the characters in there are the characters that are actually in the movie.
That makes a lot of sense, because when I heard Quan Chi, I was like, yeah, he definitely wasn't in Mortal Kombat 2.
Well, the one giveaway is, and I always forget the character's name, but the one that was introduced in the previous Mortal Kombat movie that came out in... what was it, 2020, 2021? 21. That was the lead character in that one that was wholly newly created for that movie.
Yeah, Louis Tan is the actor. I can't even remember. Yeah. Cole. That's right.
Yeah, so, you know, the fact that he's mentioned in the song when he's not in any game, that's your tip-off right there. But it's also the order that the character's named in, because, like, if you've seen the new Mortal Kombat movie, and that's why we play that, we're going to talk about that movie now, it's not a spoiler to tell you that the order that the characters are listed in the song is the order in which the actors are credited in the end credits. This plays over the end credits. So when they say the name, it's when that actor's name comes up on the screen.
That's
so
cool.
Johnny Cage is first because Carl Urban gets stopped billing. And then Kitana is ultimately, we can argue about this a little bit maybe. Kitana is the lead or the secondary lead or the real lead. Because to me, I think we talked about this a little bit offline, Jeremy. I think you got in this film, it's ironic because they make a reference to this movie in the film. Got a little bit of a Big Trouble in Little China thing going on in this movie.
You had made that reference to me prior to me seeing it, and I was thinking it through the movie, and then pretty early on, Carl Urban does make a reference, and you're right. Like your comparison being that there are really two leads in Big Trouble in Little China, I think is accurate.
Yeah, and you know, the gag is that Kurt Russell gets top billing in Big Trouble in Little China. Jack Burton is the main guy plastered on the posters, and he is the guy that in the movie definitely thinks that he's the lead character. But he's really not. He's really the comic sidekick.
He kind of stumbled into somebody else's movie in the same way Johnny did in this.
Yeah, in this film, Johnny Cage, while he's our POV character, he very much is, until the end of the movie perhaps, where he finally comes into his own a little bit. And that's not really a spoiler. It's, if you know anything about Mortal Kombat, that's who Johnny Cage is. He is this like washed up 90s martial arts movie star who is showing up at cons and getting ignored by the fans and that kind of thing. And it's like, that's one thing I didn't like about this movie was the depiction of what cons are like.
This isn't the first time I've seen this. Cobra Kai does it as well, where conventions are dark and LED lit, where you've been in a million conventions, I've been in a handful. They're never that dark.
So the one that I've seen that did the best job of depicting what a convention is actually like, believe it or not, you're going to be stunned when I tell you what this movie is.
I don't know if I've seen it, but hit me.
Ted 2.
They go
to New York Comic Con, and I've been to New York Comic Con, and I don't think they shot during the actual New York Comic Con. I might be wrong, but I don't think they did. But it looks like New York Comic Con. It looks like a convention. It's in a modern convention center that's, you know, got lots of, you know, skylights, and it's well lit and it's bright and there's lots going on, but not every single person is in a cosplay. And yeah, it's not, you know, the aisles aren't cramped, you know, you could tell they had had been to a convention before and B had the budget to make it look like a convention. I know the movie Paul, which is one of the few Simon Pegg, Nick Frost movies I haven't seen, actually shot at San Diego Comic-Con. So I'm assuming they did a great job of that. But, you know, a lot of these movies, like the other one that I think did it best besides this is Galaxy Quest. Galaxy Quest nailed a Star Trek convention.
Well, I refuse to spend this segment talking about the realism of
anything, because talking about realism when you're talking about Mortal Kombat is maybe the stupidest thing ever. Yeah, that is absolutely 100% a valid point. There is nothing realistic about Mortal Kombat, and except for maybe some of the gore.
Yeah, I will say, though, that the issue of the depiction of the comic convention is something that's kind of emblematic of the movie at large, and that is that everything seems really small scale. Pretty much every set piece that they're in just seems like one small set on a bigger soundstage.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably true, because I don't think they spent a ton of money on this movie.
No.
I might be wrong. I mean, you know, you're talking about Carl Urban's the only real name in it. You know, it is what it is. This is not a massive, you know, $300 billion movie.
No.
Or $300 million, I guess I should say.
Johnny Cage is kind of pulled out of his mundane life as a washed up actor and swept into this tournament for the fate of the world, and undergoes a pretty standard character arc, which I would argue is kind of more than Jack Burton gets, even though I think that's very much by design in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yeah.
But the world that Johnny Cage gets swept up to is very much a world where Katana is the front character, because it kind of starts and ends with her arc involving her kind of adopted father, Emperor Shao Kahn.
Yeah, she is the ultimate hero in this, you know, and I don't want to spoil anything, but she has the through line here.
Like, well, let me ask you this. When it comes to individual fight scenes, what did you like? Like, what was your favorite of the fight scenes?
I enjoyed the initial fight between Katana and Johnny Cage, and that, you know, it was very much that I could totally kill you at any moment, but I'm not going to, because I'm the hero. I liked the Liu Kang Shao Kahn battle, where he realizes that he's not the one.
That was pretty cool. I think on the topic of Liu Kang, my favorite was Liu Kang versus a Revenant, Kung Lao.
Yeah,
there
that was really,
really
great
good
too.
Choreography in it. And you could tell, like, some of these people are actors turned martial arts movie people. And then some of them are martial arts people turned movie stars. And you can really feel that in the difference between the fights. But I thought the one between Liu Kang and Kung Lao was staged really well. And there was some really good choreography in it.
Yeah. And I mean, when you get down to it, that's what this movie is about. This is not, by any kind of critical gauge, a good movie.
No, it's not.
But it is it something that you're going to go and have fun with and enjoy the eye candy factor and not really spend a whole lot of time thinking about it? Yeah. And if that's And that's all I want from a Mortal Kombat movie. Like, I don't need a big, serious, going for the Oscars Mortal Kombat movie.
Yeah, it's a difficult balance because as somebody who is a big fan of the games and of the lore, and when Mortal Kombat 2 came out, it was like a defining gaming moment for me. I feel like I have more of a connection to Mortal Kombat 2 than any other game in history, but I did have kind of like things that I wanted a Mortal Kombat movie to do that this one didn't quite do. However, I will say leagues better than the other adaptations. Like, this is the best Mortal Kombat movie.
Oh, you think so?
I do.
I guess the thing is, like, of the three that I even bother to count, which is the 90s original and then the this one and its predecessor.
Uh-huh.
Like, because the others, didn't everything else just go straight to home video or whatever?
Shockingly enough, Annihilation did get a theatrical release. Annihilation. If you've seen that movie, it's insane.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was theatrically released. Okay. So, all right. Yeah. So, I guess technically there's four we should count, but let's just pretend that doesn't exist like we do any Highlander movie that isn't the first one.
Fair.
And maybe it is, but like.
Are you leaning towards the 90s one?
No. I my memories of all of them are so insubstantial that I can't really argue against it. It just, that's what these movies are. They are popcorn movies in the purest sense. You go, you eat your popcorn, you turn your brain off for an hour and a half, you have some fun, you move on. And that's what we're going to do right now. We got to take a break and listen to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Folks like to get away, take a holiday from the neighborhood. Hop a flight to Miami Beach or to Hollywood. But I'm taking a Greyhound on the Hudson River line. I'm in a New York state of mind.
News Radio 92.3 at AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Huey, real quick, tell me your top 10 Billy Joel songs of all time.
River of Dreams. No,
we'll save that for next week. We'll save that for next week. That's a little reference to the next to last episode of The Boys, which we're going to talk about The Boys in depth next week after the finale. Looking forward to that. But there was another comic book to television adaptation that recently used that particular Billy Joel song. In fact, I don't think they've mentioned that Billy Joel song in The Boys, which is interesting because it might be the only one they haven't. But that is Daredevil Born Again, which just recently wrapped season 2 on Disney Plus. Certainly the most, I guess, mature is the right word to use, series on Disney Plus, with the
I think so.
With the possible exception of the Punisher one shot that followed it up a week later, which I haven't had a chance to watch yet. So I can't speak to that, but I understand it's the Punisher. There's a lot of violence.
Mm-hmm.
Shocking, I know. You know, the Punisher is certainly not known for, you know, usually just handing out daisies and talking about free love.
May I real quick, we talk a lot about the impeccable casting that they do over at Marvel. I mean, you think about Iron Man and Robert Downey Jr. and just what that did for his career and what it did for the building of the universe. John Bernthal as Punisher is just chef's kiss, incredible casting, as is Charlie Cox as Matt Murdock / Daredevil.
And Vincent D'Onofrio as Wilson Fisk.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you threw that in there because Wilson Fisk is probably the greatest MCU villain that I've ever seen. I mean, you got to give special flowers to Thanos. I feel that's a little bit of a different thing because Fisk is so grounded in our reality in a lot of ways and feels like a real person.
Killmonger?
Killmonger's good too.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. You know, I mean, yeah, you could also look at Loki as a villain.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the melding of performer and material with Daredevil that truly makes it sing to me. As you said, mature. And mature can mean a lot of different things. It can mean adult content, and there's a lot of that. It can mean graphic violence, and there's a lot of that. But it also explores thematic things that I think would muddy the water in kind of a lot of four quadrant, like big marquee entertainment. Not that you know, Star Wars isn't an allegory or something like that, but it's the way that they deal with it in Daredevil, crime and punishment, what people will do for what they believe to be the greater good in ways that are nuanced and really thematically rich. I think that Daredevil Born Again Season 2 is among the top echelon of just best stuff that Marvel's ever produced.
Well, let's talk about that for a second, though, because do you believe that this is a four-quadrant blockbuster kind of thing like you're talking about, or is this more niche?
Because I think it's more niche, and in fact, I think the numbers would back that up. It doesn't seem like this has been an exceptionally popular series.
Well, that's where I was kind of going with this, is like, from an audience standpoint, I do think this is a more niche, nuanced, like crime drama / political thriller with a little bit of superhero action thrown in.
Is it fair to say this is to the MCU what Andor is to Star Wars?
Maybe.
Sort of.
But above and beyond that, what I was going to, you kind of alluded to this already. The numbers are not there for this, which is I don't get why, because it's so good. Like I've heard a number of theories about this. I've heard that people weren't thrilled with season one of Born Again, which I kind of don't get. I know that it's a little choppy here and there because of the situation where they started to film something, they weren't happy with it, and they went back to the drawing board and tried to incorporate some of that footage into a new story. But I thought overall they did that pretty successfully. But there are other people that don't see it that way. And, you know, you have this being a sequel to a Netflix series, which, you know, now they've just, I think it's pretty clear by the end of this season, they've just decided to go ahead and canonize everything that happened in all of the Netflix series, because we now have seen several characters from series outside Daredevil that have now made the jump over to this new Daredevil series.
So maybe that narrows the funnel a little bit as well, to your point.
Yeah,
maybe
it could be.
Season one wasn't quite as well received. Plus, it's building on the back of something that maybe Disney Plus subscribers didn't have. Plus, it's adult content, R-rated, violent, where a lot of parents might not let their kids watch it. I think there's a couple of reasons that seem valid as to why it wouldn't be as popular. But I certainly don't think that speaks to its quality.
Well, I also think, too, like there is this jump to make immediate snap decisions about streaming series within a week or two of them finishing.
Uh-huh.
That does not take into account that's not the way everybody watches streaming. Like there are people that watch stuff like that streaming. There are people that have to see it the minute it comes out and watch it, you know, either watch it week to week or watch the entire thing immediately after the series finishes dropping.
Uh-huh.
But there's a lot of people that are like, eventually I'll get to that. And then they go back to it, you know, 6 months later, a year later, whatever. And I'm gonna point that out with regard to Disney in particular, and them having made snap judgments about things like The Acolyte, which they were going to do had announced there was going to be a second season on, and then said, no, we're not doing it. Nobody watched it. That series continues to consistently show up in the Disney Plus top 10. People are still discovering and finding and watching that series. Same thing is
so
true.
So what you're saying is success shouldn't be defined in such short, like just because it doesn't do well the first couple weeks doesn't mean it doesn't have legs or it won't find an audience.
Exactly. Another example is there were a lot of people that claimed that She-Hulk was something that was not successful from a viewing standpoint, not necessarily from a quality of the show standpoint. I know there are people that liked it, people didn't like it, whatever, but that the numbers weren't there. But Brad Winterbaum, who's the guy that's in charge of Marvel Television, actually recently came out and said that's actually not true, that over time She-Hulk is one of our most watched shows.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So this stuff is finding an audience that may not necessarily be the audience that's there the minute it drops. And it may not also be the audience that's noisy online, which is
right.
Noisy online in a supportive way, is something I would say. I think that the online support is mostly there for Daredevil, but for She-Hulk, a lot of it wasn't. There was a lot of negativity and, dare I say, misogyny towards it.
I didn't catch any of that.
They're definitely.
No, dude, I didn't catch any of that. I do not understand sarcasm.
Fair enough. But yeah, so I think hopefully Disney is learning a little bit of a lesson to that and not making snap decisions. We know in the case of Daredevil, when they came in, they brought it in for two seasons. They shortly after season one started, went ahead with a third season, which is shooting now. So we know, unless they, for some reason, you know, pull a David Zaslav and pull the plug on it and write it off for tax reasons, that we are going to get a season three.
What I don't want is for the series to be pulled towards that need for everything to be superhero spectacle, because I would imagine, I mean, there's a lot of extras in this show, which I know that costs money in the production and stuff like that, but it's not a super expensive show from like a VFX perspective. And I like that it's been small scale. I would almost prefer keeping it that way to it becoming a Defenders crossover where all of a sudden they have to bring in some, you know, massive visual effects budget and turn it into something that doesn't really feel true to what it is. And I guess I could point to the season finale as an example of kind of the not as good instincts taking over, because I love this season. I love the court scene in the final episode, but I feel that the whole like Kingpin fighting his way through all of the protesters at the end got a little bit, it wasn't for me as much. I don't know. Did you feel that, or am I kind of, is that just me?
Let's talk about that when we come back. You're listening to News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Thank you.
Blawless Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. My brain itches. It's all right. So Radiohead. Some of you may have heard me make some comments about Radiohead from time to time on this show. You may know that they are not my most loved artist of all time. And let me qualify that a little bit here. I don't have a problem with Radiohead per se. I think they've got some really great songs. I think Johnny Greenwood in particular is a brilliant musician, and I really like his score work. That song's No Creep.
That song?
Yeah. It's fine.
No, it's not.
It's No Creep. Yeah. and that's kind of a tongue-in-cheek. I actually really do like the song Creep, and I know that that's like the antithesis of a sacred cow to Radiohead fans. It's like, you know, because the band themselves are not that big on the song, whatever, you know. All I'm saying is Prince covered one of your songs and it wasn't Pyramid Song.
So was Kid A the jump off point for you? Because I find that that's kind of like what divides a lot of Radiohead. You got, you know, everything prior and then Kid A forward. And I think a lot of people just don't get into that.
No, the jump off for me is not necessarily anything to do with the band or their music. The jump off for me is the Thom Yorke is God crowd. It is
never actually met that person before.
Oh, I have many, many times. It's the Radiohead can do nothing wrong. They are God. That level of fandoms. There's a lot of bands that have that kind of fandom, and inevitably that kind of fandom tends to turn me off.
It's understandable.
I go the same direction with Pearl Jam. You know, these are bands that, you know, deserve a modicum of respect. I'm not saying they're not talented. I'm not saying that they're not, you know, worthwhile. But the fan base puts me off. You can't get.
So speaking of which, about that MCU.
Fair enough. We're playing that song because it was used in the finale of season 2 of Daredevil Born Again, which I thought was very well used in the finale of Daredevil Born Again. Also, by the way, like the song was
match.
Yes, absolutely. That melancholy feeling of that song absolutely matches the end of this season. So that works. It's like, you know, it's. Like a we won, but look at the devastation and look at what this has done to all of us to get here kind of situation. Before the break, you were saying that that you loved the courthouse scene, the legal part of the courthouse scene. But then when it erupts into a riot and a brawl is where you were like kind of like iffy on that.
I am, and I do think it's valid that Daredevil is very much a physical show, and to see fight scenes in it is essential, but I don't know about Kingpin hulking out and becoming superhuman when he needs to.
That's where I disagree with you as a fan of the comics, because that is the Kingpin. Like, he is borderline superhuman, in the same way that Daredevil is borderline superhuman. Like, Daredevil is, he's got the radar sense and the you know, the enhanced senses, but he's not like super strong per se. He might be very acrobatic and very like Olympic level, but he's not really beyond that. Kingpin is supposed to be this big, massive guy who looks like he should be this slow, plodding fat dude, but actually is that all of that extra weight is actually muscle.
And yeah, the boxing scene is fantastic. I feel like it's just that it was an obligatory action sequence that had to up the spectacle.
But I think
it, over keeping it thematically rich.
But I think that that was on theme for what was happening with the character. Like, he'd snapped, he'd lost everything, and he was reduced to what he is at his core, which is a rage-filled monster.
I like that. I think that's an astute observation.
And who thinks that he's right and everybody else is wrong. And that he's, you know, only, you know, not to put it in any kind of real world terms, but everything is screwed and only I can fix it.
You know, The Boys is doing something similar, where the allusions are very surface and very in your face, and there's no way to kind of misconstrue it or have to think your way through it. I think Daredevil does a really good job of paralleling things that are happening in the world without it seeming so on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, the fascinating thing about The Boys is The Boys is doing it in a way that is predicting what happens because it was written year and a half, 2 years ago.
It's insane.
But when the episodes are dropping, they're dropping like a week after the things happen in real life.
It's crazy how that has played out.
More than once.
I think Daredevil keeps a safe enough distance that people may be able to think their way through it without feeling so villainized. I don't know.
Well, I mean, there are certainly a lot of parallels between Wilson Fisk and a certain real life person who I'm not going to name.
Mm-hmm.
They're both New York developers who have, mm-hmm. let's say, not necessarily the most by the book straight and narrow paths to their to the positions they find themselves in. I'm not making any judgment calls. I'm not saying anything. You know, this is not a political show. But there are parallels there. There are parallels between, you know, a number of characters that you can make these parallels with. Do I think that when they put him into government, which they did in the comics first, that was done as an indictment of real world things? That's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, this character did not originate as a politician. But if the shoe fits, does that make sense?
So I guess it kind of depends on what your preference is. Do you like plausible deniability, or does the show seem to be erring on the side of plausible deniability, or do you like for things to be spelled out so explicitly that there's no room for really nuanced discussion? And for me, Daredevil does a really good job of laying things out in a way that doesn't necessarily feel so judgmental, even towards Fisk, which I think is really cool, because when he and Daredevil kind of come to their agreement that they both love the city and that they both have these different ways of trying to make the city the best version of itself, I think that's interesting, and it kind of gives, and this is the big theme of the show, but it kind of gives the character grace in a way that oftentimes villains aren't afforded.
Agreed. And I think that gets to the root of who Matt Murdock is as a character. He is ultimately going to be a very Catholic person.
Uh-huh.
He is ultimately going to be very, very spiritual and very, very influenced by his faith, but also very influenced by, you know, his late friend Foggy Nelson.
And I'm not somebody that necessarily identifies with that, but man, does it work in the context of this story for this character. Like, I love all of the allusions to Catholicism, and that episode with Bullseye, just absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, all of the characters are really great in this show. Bullseye has been a very interesting character, possibly a more well-rounded character than he's ever been in the comics, which is very interesting. And we got Jessica Jones back. And
very cool.
As far as I'm concerned, Jessica Jones can do whatever she wants to me. I mean, can do whatever she wants.
Good casting.
Love Kristen Ritter's Jessica Jones. Love the character from the comics, and she is that character on screen. Got to see a little bit more. We're going to see more of the, some of the other Defenders characters in the next season of the show, which I'm very looking forward to. We'll get that next year. It's going to be interesting to see how that falls in. It's also going to be interesting to see how this plays into the Spider-Man movie that we're getting very soon, because I think it's going to play into that as well. But we'll talk about that when that comes around. We are done for this week. Till next week, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.